Chapter 13. Saints and Sinners. The quiet noises of diligent men at work on the Woolwalk relaxed Devereux. His command staff went about their duties with focus. Low conversations and the occasional squawk of incoming Vox messages were reassuringly human noises, clear and vital in the greyed-out day of Parmenio. The breach sheared through the wall not 20 meters from Devereux's position, but the defence lines set below to guard the gap were laid out with pleasing geometry, and appeared at that moment proof against the enemy's attentions. Peace held on the far side of the channel. No work was done on the mole that day. The enemy were waiting, as were Devereux and his men. The war had changed in a moment. The imperial regent had come to Parmenio. Shellfire rumbled over the distant mountains as enemy positions around Hecaton were obliterated from orbit. The blanket fogs that covered the plains were perturbed. No longer a solid mass, they broke into rolling banks, whose motion over the wasted land revealed ruined towns and farms reduced to shell-pocked mud. The haze in the higher reaches of the air had dispersed, allowing him to see all the way to Hecaton for the first time since the enemy came. Before the war, the view had been fine. The air was clean and clear most days, and Hecaton easy to see. The city spread lacily down the slopes of the mountains, a filigreed ornament upon nature's art, white peaks above, green lands below. People had come to Tyros's walls to see it, that view of Ultramar's perfection, where man and planet lived in tolerable balance. What the blowing mists revealed horrified him. The peaks of the mountains were still white. All else had changed. Agricole turned to toxic bog. Ruined towns, white as bones in liquefied flesh. Worst of all was the fate of Hecaton. It was 70 kilometers from there to the island, a distance that reduced a city from a place to a detail. Devereux did not need to get any closer to know it was lost. The fine towers were twisted and black, as if they'd been partially melted by mistake and inexpertly mended by a fool who had no wit to see how poor a restoration he provided. The great dome of the Administratum Officio, a wonder in the days before, 3,000 meters across and an eggshell blue that outmatched the sky, was gone. The suburbs were black smears on the mountainsides. When he used his magnoculars, Devereux saw rivers of filth pouring down steep streets. War drummed its beat in the heavens and lit them with sporadic bursts of power. Ships waged silent battle in orbit, out of sight above the clouds, but debris falling from the fight and stray weapon strikes filled the sky over the plains with booms and whooping discharges. From the far side of the river sea, where Kelaton stood firm, stripes of linear light stabbed, the glaring blasts of the defence lasers of inland Edomos. A peculiar thunder was called from the sky with each blaze of collimated light. The clouds bunched in and swirled around their track, leaving bald slashes where the sky showed blue, a sight Devereux never thought to see again, before the clouds swirled back in to plug the gap with fitful washes of rain. The lasers fired only when the Death Guard fleet strayed into their arc of fire. The curve of the planet limited their contribution to the battle. Devereux was pleased to see them used. Too long the defence laser battery had been a threat rather than an active participant in the war. He held up his magnoculars again. Victory would be an act of defiance rather than something to be measured as a successful defence. The Ultramarines could take Hecaton back, but it was too late. Whole swathes of Parmenio would have to burn to clear away the Death Guard's taint. Morbid though the thoughts were, he did not submit to despair. He could not. The crunch of boots on rubble had him turn to face Sister Superior Iolanth. Behind her, the outer door of the airlock leading into the tall shoreward bastion was open, shedding bright lumen light into the grey of the infected day. Iolanth had her helmet off, and for perhaps only the third or fourth time since Devereux had made her acquaintance, he saw her face. He looked forward to seeing her face. It was strange, he thought, how beautiful all the Battle Sisters were. Service to the Emperor, especially in battle, should not require such aesthetic perfection. He suspected the hand of lesser, impure men in their selection. Iolanthe wore her white hair in braids down the left side of her skull, drawn so tight and close to the head they exposed the scalp between. The right side was shaved down to the skin, leaving an expanse free for a large Aquila tattoo. Two scars marred her face, one thick enough to crook the line of her lips where it crossed them, the other fine, pale as a moon, running almost level from one side of her forehead to the other. On the left, it turned down a little and grew fatter, like a large tick, as if she'd been approved by some cosmic, sanguinary power. Devrus wondered where she had got those scars. He did not ask her. He did not dare. Iolanthe was imperious and fierce, with piercing yellow eyes. Devrus had the impression that if he praised her beauty in any way, she would mutilate herself on the spot to prove her devotion to the Emperor was of more importance. "The Primarch comes," said Devrus. His eyes lingered on Iolanthe's face a moment too long, and he blushed. "I have confirmation of it, from the highest channels. We are to await relief." He stared out over the harbour, wishing the orders were different, that they were to sally out and take the fight to the enemy. He was tired of hiding. "Indeed, it is so. The son of the Emperor himself arrives to punish the traitors," said Iolanthe. "Wondrous news, but not the most wondrous." Devrus slotted his magnoculars back into their case. The magnetic catch clicked.
"The girl is awake."
"She is," said Iolanthe. "Come into the bastion with me. I grant you the honour of seeing her." Devrus followed her inside. The girl peeked at Devrus over her blanket, her large brown eyes expressing a mix of shyness and confidence. He hadn't seen what colour they were before. The terrible light had obscured them. He looked away. The light should surely have burned out her eyes. He couldn't shake the image of empty, blackened sockets.
"As you see, she is well," said Iolanthe.
She nodded at the two battle sisters standing guard. They departed wordlessly. The guards were within the chamber, Devrus noted, not outside.
"Doesn't she have a name?" Devrus said.
Iolanthe shrugged. The detail was unimportant to her. The girl didn't offer one. He went to the bedside of the girl.
"This is Major Devrus. He is the commander of the auxilia garrison of Tyros and the master of this city. You owe him your respect," Iolanthe said portentously.
"Hello," said Devrus.
"You really don't owe me any respect," he said. He didn't much care for Iolanthe's introduction.
"I'm just a soldier. Can I sit down?"
He gestured at the chair by the bed. When the girl did not reply, he sat anyway. She followed him with her huge brown eyes. He leaned forward and looked at her encouragingly.
"They said I had to speak to you, but I thought Colonel Anselm was commander," she said.
It was not surprising a child of Ultramar should know who the military commander was. Once the war had begun and Macragge moved from civilian to military law codes, Anselm's word had become law.
"He died," said Devrus.
"And Colonel Borodino, and Major Vaskus, Dled, and Hormank." He didn't dwell on that.
"When did you take charge?" she asked.
"A few weeks ago," he said.
Borodino's death had occurred 6 weeks past, and it had been a messy one. There was fighting in the transit tunnel beneath the harbour channel before they blew it up and washed the enemy back over to the other side. The colonel had been caught by one of the enemy's bioweapons after they'd lain the demolition charges. Devrus resisted the advance of memory, tried to stop its replay before he got there and saw the way Borodino's skin had melted off him, the way he gargled as he drowned in the soup of his own lungs, the way... "Not now," he thought. He smiled.
"We don't tend to announce these things to the civilians, unless there's a good reason."
Devrus leaned back in the chair. Sitting down allowed his tiredness to steal up on him and squat on his shoulders. A physical force wrestled with his eyelids, trying to force them shut. He yawned and pulled his hand down over his face, stretching it.
grit scraped against his skin. His last wash was... When had he last washed?
I'm sorry, he said. I'm tired.
He laughed, as if this were amusing.
I'm tired too,
the girl said. She pulled her knees up under her chin. Devris reassessed her age at maybe 14 standard. She'd seemed older on the line. He supposed his own daughters would be around her age by now, one slightly older, one younger. If they were still alive. He had no idea if they were.
It's very tiring when he comes.
Who? Said Devris.
Him, she said.
Who's he?
He asked. She stared at him silently. Do you remember coming to the front? He asked. She shook her head.
I remember the Blessed Sisters asking for me. They came into our basement and said they heard what I did with the well and that I had to come with them and see you.
Do you remember purifying the well?
A little. I remember light and something moving through me.
After that? Asked Devris.
Just like normal.
Until today. When you came to the front, you don't remember anything. She shook her head again.
Nothing, until I woke up here.
Right, he said. How are things in the city? I have not had chance to go within the walls recently. She shrugged.
What will happen to me? She asked.
Only now did she look a little afraid. Devris leaned over and patted her knee. It should have been a natural gesture, but it felt awkward, and he regretted doing it as soon as he had. He was out of practice, and had never had the paternal knack. His girls had their mother for that. He had seen them so rarely. You'll be fine, he said. The hollowness of his promise ashamed him. He couldn't guarantee that. You get some rest, he said. He looked at Ireland. She nodded. They went outside the room. Devris strode, grim face, down the dusty corridor. He stopped beneath a broken light panel. What exactly are you going to do with her? He asked. I understand this showing her to me is a courtesy. Sister Superior Ireland's yellow eyes stared at him hard. She didn't blink much.
It is. Although you are the interim governor of this city, in these matters of the sacred and the unholy, the Adeptus Ministerium hold preeminence. I brought you here to tell you that, as commander of the Chamber Militant, I will oversee the girl's assessment.
What are you going to do with her? He repeated. Ireland looked away, complex emotions seething beneath the surface of her beautiful, scarred face.
There are two possibilities. The first is that the girl is possessed by a holy power. Her actions in the city suggest so. When she cleansed the well and made the unwholesome pure again. She remembers that, but there were more. Strange lights, predictions of missile strikes, and the annihilation of a demon imp that had come within our defences.
When did that happen? Said Devris, with concern. The girl's actions at the well had been reported to him a few days since. He'd been too busy to chase it up. This other news was fresh and alarmed him. There were strange creatures the Death Guard had brought with them, vicious insects and the tittering fat things like malevolent children that infested the land they took. If only one of them got onto the island.
8 days ago, she said.
Why didn't you tell me? He said.
Do not be angry. I found this out myself yesterday when I went to bring the girl out of the city. Her people kept it a secret until we came. I had no time to pass on this information. You will remember the attack and her turning back the engines of the enemy from the defence line. Was that a joke? Thought Devris. He doubted Ireland's capable of humour.
How could I forget?
These phenomena are concordant with a holy influence.
They looked at each other for a long moment, the man in his dirty uniform, the woman in her pristine crimson armour. The other option is that she is a witch. Devris said. That's the only other one, isn't it? A rogue psyker, or worse, a pawn of the enemy. Iolanthe nodded.
Regrettably so.
If not, she's what, a saint? He couldn't believe that. Not on Parmenio.
I do not think so. I have seen with my own eyes the blessed Saint Celestine. I have read the chronicles of the lives of the holy saints who have arisen at times of peril in the name of our most divine Lord, the God Emperor of Terra. This is something else. At the worst, it could be our undoing. Many times there have been beings who claimed to be saints, but who were not. The enemies of the Emperor are devious. This could be one of their tricks. It pleases the false gods to conjure hope in despairing hearts and to use our faith against us. We must be wary.
Devorus narrowed his eyes. You spoke of something wondrous.
I did. If she is not a witch, and this is not a trick. She paused.
Then what?
She would not say. Hope overthrows reason. Fact must be determined.
Iolanthe's face hardened.
She must be put to the test. She must pass the Probos Malefica.
The witch testing? She's just a child. Does she deserve this?
Does anybody deserve any of this? Retorted Iolanthe. Some of the worst monsters in history have been born of children. Innocence is no protection against evil. Be thankful I have told you. You cannot stop me. I do not require your blessing or your permission. That I inform you is another courtesy. You should be grateful.
You could at least ask her, he said.
Who said I have not? Said Iolanthe.
You did.
She agreed.
She's frightened, said Devorus. She'd probably agree to anything.
With good reason. Tell me, Major, if you were in her position, would you rather not know if you were a source of corruption? Would you rather die cleanly or become the means of destruction of all you care for? If she is pure, if what I pray for is happening, she could save us all. If it is not, then the least we can do is save her soul. A little pain and the death of one's mortal shell is a trifling price to pay to avoid eternal damnation. Devorus felt uneasy. The ruthlessness of the Adeptus Ministorum's excruciators was well known.
It's easy to say that when it's not your pain, he said, surprising himself.
He couldn't quite grasp why the suffering of this one child was so important to him.
Iolanthe stared at him in contempt.
I shall inform you of what we discover. Do not interfere.
Devorus was very tired. He didn't want to argue, but his morals had him rebel against lassitude. Sister, he began. It was as far as he got. The bastion shook, dust sifted from the ceiling. What was that? He asked. Iolanthe was already moving faster than he could hope to match. He chased her down the corridor. She was out through the open fortification airlock before him. The door hissed shut behind her, and he hammered fruitlessly at its control panel while it went through its cycle. Another tremor shook the tower, and another. The airlock door opened, and he hurried in.
Come on, come on!
He muttered, as the machines burbled to themselves, checking and rechecking for contaminants. A fourth tremor, stronger than the last, rattled both him and the devices in the airlock. Their operating lights shivered from green to red and back again at the shock.
Purity maintained, said the machines.
A chime. The outer door slid back into its housing. Devorus shoved his way around it before it was fully open. Iolanthe stood on the battlements with a crowd of people. They had abandoned their tasks and were looking towards Hecaton. Devorus arrived in time to see the fifth and final lance strike stab down from orbit. Multiple beams at various angles, probably coming in from different vessels. They were well placed and struck so close in time they may as well have been simultaneous. He flinched at the searing light. Clouds raced away where the beams crashed through the air, heavy as hammers, flattening Hecaton's corrupted spires. An instant was all the measure of time they required to deliver Gilliman's judgment. They snapped off before the noise of impact had time to reach Devorus's ears. Rings of plasmic discharge rolled out from the impact site, the luminous gases expanding and dissipating into the yellow fog. Finally, sound caught up with light, and the false thunder of impact drummed its way over the plains.
Hecaton was an orange splash on the mountains. Brief flows of lava had replaced the rivers of filth. All along the wall and in the defense lines below, weary men ripped off their respirators and cheered. And lo, the Emperor did judge his enemies unworthy of redemption, and smote them from the void and the ground and the warp, said Iolanthe, quoting text Devorus was unfamiliar with. Full wrath did his anger wax, so that all who beheld him trembled at his righteousness, and fell upon those who may be traitor, and the slaughter did grow by his will and his action. Several men nearby got to their knees, whispering prayers over hands spread wide in the sign of the Aquila. Several of the most devout called to the holy warrior, asking for her blessing.
"Back to your feet," said Devorus, blinking after images away. "It's not over yet. Back to your duties."
Iolanthe looked at him triumphantly. "The Primarch has spoken, and before he comes here, I will be ready to offer him the head of a witch, or the means of salvation." She left the battlements, calling loudly into the vox pickup mounted in her collar for her excruciators.